Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 with Squidge. Let's look at the World Cup again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Volleyball. It's not Squidge Volleyball. Do I mean volleyball? Hold on. Which is the... Yes, volleyball. It is volleyball.
Are you sure?
I've ruined my own joke twice. It's fine. I'm going to start this again, but we can keep this all in. Okay, are we ready? Do we like rugby? Not rugby. Rugby isn't relevant. Why am I talking about rugby? It's the Squidge Volleyball Volleyball World Cup Retrospective Podcast.
Right, that's the one.
And today, we are going to be talking about the fixture from the 2011 Volleyball World Cup in which Russia
The
Russian volleyball team played the Italian men's volleyball. Should make that clear.
Men's volleyball
World Cup. Okay. Yeah, because obviously volleyball being one of those sports where women's volleyball is bigger.
I watched the wrong match.
Volleyball. Did you?
I watched the women's.
What did you watch? Oh, mate. But we've been doing this whole podcast. We're, what, like 20 episodes in to a podcast about the men's volleyball tournament.
No, I forgot again. I'm sorry.
I mean, to be fair, for 20 episodes in a row, I did just watch the scene from Top Gun where they play volleyball.
Yeah, I know. You've been reminding me the whole time that we're watching the men's, Top Gun. But I'm sorry. Next time I'll get it. Okay?
Okay. Right. We're just going to have to crack on and present a really balanced view between the men's and women's volleyball from 2011.
As a backup plan, I did watch the men's rugby match from the 2011 Rugby World Cup between Italy and Russia as well. So we can talk about that instead if you want to.
Sorry, what's that?
What
are men?
Men. They're like women.
Wait a second, I watched the women's match as well.
Did you now?
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, we can't. No, we can't. But it's a podcast on the men's rugby. We can't do it on the men's volleyball. We can't do it on the... Look, the point I'm making is when you type 2011 Italy-Russia full match, you know, into YouTube, something comes up and it's about 2 hours long and I start playing it and then I realise 2 minutes in it was volleyball.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It took you 2 minutes to realise it was volleyball?
Well, because... No, because there's like all these trailers for volleyball, and I was like, okay, clearly they recorded the program, they recorded the broadcast,
right.
And they had loads of trailers for volleyball beforehand.
Okay, okay.
And then I realised, no, this is just a volleyball match.
When they scored the first point, it started. Hang on a second, this is different.
Yeah, wait a second. Why is Tom Cruise here? Yeah, the last set finished 25-21 to Russia.
Okay.
It was a 3-1 victory.
Okay,
over Italy
for Russia. Okay,
for Russia. Yeah, they look furious. They're big angry lads, the Russian volleyball team. Like, you would not expect a volleyball team to be so aggressive, but the Russian volleyball team look fuming.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah. But do you know a team that was potentially more aggressive in a sport in 2011 when playing against Italy?
Was it a team of bulldogs?
Yes.
Was it Ruckley?
It was Ruckley and the boys. Ruckley, this is back when he played for Russia.
Sitcom. Do you remember
before
the,
he went and qualified through the sevens
of course,
for England
yeah.
and became the face of English rugby?
Back when, because there was this whole scandal.
I was about to say
scandal,
the feces of English rugby there, by the way, instead of the face.
The feces of English rugby. That was 2015.
Of English rugby.
Yes,
yeah.
That's also fitting. For people who are unaware, people who didn't listen to me bang on about him for 20 minutes on Blood and Mud the other week, Ruckley was the England mascot for a few years. And he became the England mascot because he fell in a hole in the Twickenham turn.
During a kicking session?
Yep, he touched like a magic rugby ball, which turned him into a massive hench dog.
Yeah, and it's terrifying because, firstly, his owners don't care that he's come out of the ground as a massive henchman. Like, his head remains the same. However, like his body becomes so mad. Like, I think you compared him to James Haskell.
Yeah, he looks like James Haskell. He's got like James Haskell's body,
and
you know, that kind of like ultra built.
His owners just kind of go like, "Ruckley, like you've all grown
yeah,
up."
Yeah, like, ah, oh, it's you know, it's like you know the opening titles of Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Yeah,
right. when it's like, they're like, oh, we got this dog, right? It was really, really small. And then one day, suddenly, it was bloody massive.
Yeah. It's one of my favourite storylines, to be honest, is Clifford the Big Red Dog, because there's a great bit of character development in there, in that he goes from being a small boy to a very big one.
I shouldn't praise Louis C.K., considering he is a serial public masturbator, but there's a great bit of Louis C.K. stand-up from before we knew he was a serial public masturbator and a creep and everything else, where he talks about how Clifford the Big Red Dog is the worst book series because there's 90 of them, and in all of them, the plot is, look how big this dog is.
Yeah, do you think they'd maybe get used to it, you know? The fact that, like, because every time it's always just kind of like, oh yeah, dog's pretty big again. Huh. Yeah, when that happens. Or maybe they're like,
oh, how many bonios do you have to buy him?
Classic.
Oh boy. Ho ho.
Oh, most dogs are sniffing the side of trees and he's knocking them down like, no tomorrow. Yeah.
Whenever he pisses against a lamppost, actually the piss is bigger than the lamppost. Yeah. People start marking his own marks.
Yeah.
You know. That's a solid bit. I saw a film yesterday called 100... We're going on another tangent, do you mind?
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, should we introduce ourselves quickly? I'm Robbie / Squidge, you're...
I'm Will Owen.
Great, okay. I saw a film yesterday called 100% Wolf, right?
Okay.
Which is an Australian movie. It's kind of notable for being like one of like the three films that have been released for the cinemas reopening from COVID.
Right, okay. Is it like, just one long shot on the wolf? And
yes, it's 100%.
It's 100% wolf.
Yes.
Wolf, yeah.
Yes. No, it's just a recipe. It's just a recipe for how to make wolf.
You put in one wolf, and you have a wolf.
And that's it, yeah. He just does a wolf there, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, right, the plot is, there's this boy, and he's a werewolf, right? But he doesn't turn into a werewolf until he's 16. Like, his 16th birthday,
so
he turns into a werewolf for the first time.
The recipe is one boy, and you have a wolf.
Yeah, exactly,
so
yeah.
You don't even need wolf to have wolf.
No, he's 50% wolf, really. Right, the plot is, right, on his 16th birthday, he's going to turn into a wolf, and his dad is like the leader wolf, and he's like the biggest, scariest wolf.
This is bollocks! For my 16th birthday, I got the greatest hits of 10cc! What if I want to become a wolf?
Birthday? Come on. I know, it's rubbish, isn't it? I can't remember what happened on my 16th birthday, but it was not interesting. I did not become a wolf.
You're implying getting the greatest hits of 10cc is interesting.
No, it's memorable, isn't it?
Yeah, fair.
You always remember.
Then again, I'd remember it a bit better if I turned into a wolf.
So would I. What if you didn't listen to it the full way through? And if you'd listened past Dreadlock Holiday, which apparently there are more hits than Dreadlock Holiday, you would have turned into a wolf.
I assume that's track one.
Yeah. It's either track one or the last track, isn't it?
No, it'll be track one.
You either play it right up or you hold it so you hold people's attention.
No, but it's 10cc. They're not going to hold people's attention. That's the issue. They try to hold people's attention by putting one of two hits at the start.
They're such a low caliber that they're 40cc below the minimum cc in Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So 50% wolf, right? 100% wolf, right?
50%
okay.
Wolf, he's dropped.
50% wolf.
To be fair, he's 50%
well, he's a boy. Man. He's 50% boy, 50% wolf. Exactly.
Yeah.
So when he turns 16, right, he goes into the moonlight for the first time, and he's going to transform into a wolf, and he turns into a poodle.
Oh.
And that's the whole thing, right? It's like,
so it's pretty much a reverse Clifford.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. So like, he becomes a poodle and he has to then run around and prove himself that, he has like 2 days to prove himself that he proved that he's a wolf.
And, to like, qualify for the Poodle Olympics or something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like Putin stood over his shoulder telling him, I'll put you down. But basically, right, there's this bit where, because he meets a scrappy young other dog who's like a crossbreed who lives on the streets, is hard and whatever, played by Samara Weaving. I did not realise it was Samara Weaving until afterwards, and then it sort of made sense. But yeah, so she then teaches her all the, like, the dog tricks and how to be a dog rather than a wolf.
Sure.
And because there's this big thing built up, like, dogs and wolves hate each other, which doesn't make any sense, but fine. So he's having to hide the fact that he's actually a wolf, but he's not a wolf, he's a dog. So Samara Weaving at one point is saying, like, oh yeah, this is how you mark territory, and this is what you do, and this is you do a piss. And he's like, oh, I'm never going to wee in public.
So this film, 100% Wolf, has a potty training scene.
Yes, so there's a scene then in which we see, and this is the point I was getting onto, we see the territory being marked, right? And basically what happens, when you walk past an area that a dog has marked, in this world, the dog's ghost appears in front of that landmark.
What?
So, like, in front of the lamppost, like, the ghost of this dachshund would appear and be like, "Hey, this is my lamppost."
Seriously?
Yeah, that's in the film.
Oh, it's in the film. Great... Sorry, I forgot. Yeah, yeah. I forgot wrong about film. I thought it was in
the there's also a great bit where there's a Scotty dog turns up, and all these dialogues written to have a Scottish accent. So he's saying like, "Aye, lassie," and so on. Except the actor they cast is Australian. So you've just got this Australian as a Scotty dog saying, "Oh, aye, lassie." It's like Luke McLean, you know, because he's got a Scottish surname, but he's which is relevant to the rugby we're getting onto.
But he's Australian. But he plays
exactly.
Italy.
He's Australian. Exactly. Yeah. Do you know the other thing about me seeing 100% Wolf yesterday?
Go on.
So I saw 100% Wolf, right? I then saw another film, which I won't mention because I just ended up talking about it the full way. And I was planning on going back that afternoon to see there's a re-release of Inception at the minute.
Right.
10th anniversary and so on. And I went to go outside and I'd come out in just a t-shirt because we'd been in a heat wave the last week. Sure. Right. And I then got to the door of the cinema and I realised it was chucking it down and I checked the weather app. And so it was going to rain for another 2 hours, the time I'd have to be outside before going back in to see Inception. And I turned around and thought, okay, I'll just go and see whatever's on, because, you know, my ticket would be free anyway.
Right.
I'll just see whatever's on just to stay inside.
Because,
and
of course, they know you're Squid Rugby, so they give you free tickets.
They just let me for free. Yeah. I'm in the town rugby, so they're just like, hey, you're named after us.
Yeah.
So I went back inside, right? And what should be the only film playing in that hour... but 100% Wolf. So I saw 100% Wolf twice yesterday.
Jesus Christ, man.
I know. I saw it twice in one day.
So you saw 200% Wolf.
I saw 200% Wolf.
Accumulatively.
Yeah. We're 11 minutes in. We haven't mentioned which game we're covering. It's Italy against Russia.
Rugby.
In the 2011 Rugby World Cup. Yeah. Yes. So I saw, 100% Wolf twice. But I only saw this game once. Really, I should be doing the podcast on 100% Wolf because I'm an expert on that film.
Yeah. It sounds like a good film.
It's all right.
It doesn't really.
So, it's fine. Rhys Darby's in it. You know, fine. Whatever. Who cares? From, you know, Flight of the Conchords and that. So, anyway. Italy 53, Russia 17. What did you think of this rugby?
I thought it was good rugby. Yeah. No, you know what? Overall... I thought that the standard of this game was pretty poor. It was... The thing is, I've looked at a lot of these games and, oh, that's so incredibly 2011. This was very 2004, the standard of this game. Because it was basically, to just briefly touch on the team, it was pretty much Italy's second team playing against Russia here. So they brought in the likes of Praticetti, Boccino, Tognolati, who weren't particularly, you know... They wouldn't be trusted really to play in first team Six Nations games, for Italy, it's safe to say.
Only players who carried, three players carried over from the previous game, which were Sergio Parise, captain, Andrea Marzi, who had, of course, been... It was the previous year, wasn't it? He was Six Nations player.
It was that year.
It was that year, yeah. I was going to say that, and I thought, I'll correct myself. And I think it was Bortolami. It was either Bortolami or Golden Hayes carried over from the previous game, one of the second players.
Did McLean play the previous game?
Oh, no, McLean. So McLean played fullback, and he shifted over to the wing.
Right.
So, yeah, it was pretty much the same... a different team.
Yeah. And the standard of sort of... We talk so much about the lack of shape, of what we consider shape these days in the year of 2020 in rugby, you know, but like there was such a lack of it and it was literally just whoever ran onto the ball better would make ground, you know, this game. And like, don't get me wrong, the standard of it was pretty dreadful and very much like third team level these days. But at the same time, I think it was great fun to watch.
It was entertaining, consistently, because both teams really went at it, to use the phrase I keep using on this podcast. But, right, so the game starts, and as we talked about with Samoa the other week, the first kickoff goes out on the full that Rashkov, who's coming at 10, normally a centre for Russia, just kicks it dead, right off there. And you kind of see Artemyev is half-heartedly chasing. Then he realises it's bouncing over the trial, and he starts sprinting for a bit. Then he realises it's going dead and kind of like resigns himself to... This is my World Cup. Yeah. And then, so there's then the resulting scrum, you know, 1 minute in, if that. Italy absolutely blow them off the ball.
Yeah.
Like, they drive it almost up to the 10-meter line. Yeah. And the other thing is, it's great refereed by Wayne Barnes because he doesn't blow for a penalty. It's like, they didn't scrummage legally. They just force them backwards.
Yeah.
And they keep going and going and going and make so much ground, so much momentum. And then, because they won a scrum, Italy go, lads, I think we're the All Blacks today. and they suddenly start going mental and just throwing these passes I've never seen an Italian team play throw otherwise.
Yeah.
They suddenly start going all out and throwing offloads and trying to run lines and just not playing like any Italy team seen before us since.
It's bizarre, isn't it? And like,
yeah.
The level of confidence this Italian second string back line had compared to what you usually see in the Six Nations was insane. Like,
yeah.
The amount of like backhanded offloads you were seeing from them and like accurately as well. And you kind of got the impression like, well, if you throw these offloads, lads, why don't you do it more?
Yeah. And I thought this during, you know, towards the end of the first half, especially that first half, especially the first sort of 35 minutes where Italy are completely in control.
Yeah.
It's the most confident I've ever seen any Italian team look.
Yeah, it's
like,
phenomenal.
And it's not just, you know, like the All Blacks look confident when they play Namibia or something.
Yeah.
But it was on another scale, the night and day difference between this Italian team and a normal Italian team, you know.
Yeah, of any era.
Even the teams that played against, I suppose they struggled against Canada the following World Cup, but even the Italy team that played against Namibia and Canada in last year's World Cup.
Yeah.
Night and day different to this team, who just were like, we are the best team, we are the big boys, we've come to put you away. And they did that, despite having Riccardo Bacchino at 10.
Yeah. And we'll get on to him.
But we will.
It seemed like just a proper, like, convincing tier one team, which I know Italy in theory are, but I mean, you would sort of not be too surprised if they sort of scraped through this game rather than just completely convincingly, comprehensively battering Russia as they did.
Yeah.
To touch on the first try, which was scored by Sergio Parisse himself. And again, this shows the sheer level of confidence, having your number eight running out the back with Adomi running.
It is Parisse, though.
It is Parisse,
but
who,
yeah,
has never, ever lacked confidence. But the way that Italy will have been sort of convinced to play, and I guess, you know, he was behind Bacchino, who is in no position to tell Parisse what to do, you know? But to have sort of their patterns of play organised by their number eight is something that just shows a great level of confidence.
Yeah.
And then he throws the dummy and does the whole, fuck it, I'll do it myself thing. No, but they, try.
No, but it's a really nicely worked try.
It's a lovely
everyone
try.
Everyone picks their lines really late. Yeah. And Bacchino takes the ball, and everyone then waits, sees how the defences are lining, and then runs their lines.
Yeah.
And Parisse is he doesn't throw the dummy because he's Parisse and he's overconfident.
No. It's the
he
right
throws
option.
It because he waits. Yeah, exactly. Like, the defence drifts off.
Yeah.
Because everyone's picked lines, everyone's run them, decided on based on what the defence is doing.
It doesn't change the fact that he loved that he scored the first try of the game.
Oh, yeah. And so do the crowd as well. The crowd were like, this is the lad we know. This is the guy we've heard of, and he scored.
Likewise, the commentators. One player that they
do. Oh.
But I do have a note 9 minutes in where I've just put, Bacchino has no clue how to manage a game.
No.
Because at the moment that I picked that out for was, Italy had made a break from within their own 22 and gotten up to halfway. Then Eduardo Gori is playing 9, isn't he? And he feeds Bacchino, who has like a pod of forwards to run off him. And I mean a pod, because that's what it was back in those days. And there's three forwards on his right-hand side, and he just kind of wildly flings it in between the three of them, hoping one of them would catch it. And it's like, you don't know your systems, do you? You don't know which of those three players you're supposed to be passing to.
Yeah. And, like, I think it's the same pass we're talking about, where he just, like, lobs it over a second row's head.
Yeah.
And you're just, what are you doing? What are you trying to achieve there?
Yeah.
And then, like, his first convert, no, he then does a kick, and it's just a normal, like, kick down the line from rushing away a penalty, and he hoofs it right in the air, and it's like, yeah, it goes out, it's fine, he did the job, but he's put so much height on it, what was the point in that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's leaving the stadium height, you know, it's you remember the time Lee Byrne hit a camera on the stadium roof?
Yeah.
It's like that level height, and it doesn't have to be, he's just kicking down the line from a penalty.
No, yeah, and then there's one very positive contribution he makes, but it is down to a lot of incompetence when he kicks, does a really lovely kick for the corner in open play.
Yeah.
And both, I think it's Igor Klishnikov, might be Vasily Artemyev, is chasing back alongside Matteo Prostichetti. Both go to dive on the ball. Neither of them just have any clue how to keep it in their grasp. And it ends up going through the legs of Prostichetti by accident as he kind of trips over the ball. And Benvenuto kind of picks up the ball and goes, oh, well, I guess I've scored. And then gets the most big dick confidence for the rest of the game.
I just don't. I've got written at one point just who is Riccardo Bacchino.
I know. I only remember him for this game. That's the only thing I remember him for.
He won a handful of caps over 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
But not regularly, you know, like he'd come off the bench for five minutes. because Chris Burton was their second choice at the
Christ
point.
He was, wasn't he?
Chris Burton was their established second choice. I think he got injured, or maybe it was just drops.
Yeah, one of the...
Because I remember, as I remember, in the warm-ups in Italy's wider squad, they only had two fly halves,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was Pacino, who no one had heard of.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him come in for one of their warm-up games, I can't remember which one, and him throwing one nice pass and going like, oh, is he useful then? And then games like this, and games like, whenever he got a chance after that, you went, who is this guy?
Yeah, as I say,
he's useless.
This, weirdly, this... I have rewatched this game at some point before, and I'm not really sure why, but a few years ago, I just randomly, I think, watched this game again, and Ricardo Pacino was playing, and I just thought, who the hell is he? Like, I don't remember having heard of him. Unless I just remember him for this game, and the fact that he was that bad that I would kind of keep tabs on him, and the fact that he was playing, you know, centre in the Italian leagues or something, and just how he managed to guide his way to the Italian ten jersey, I have no idea.
The exact same thing happened with Carlo Canna a few years later.
Sure, but it worked for him.
Sort of came absolutely out of nowhere, and you kind of went, oh, is he another Ricardo Pacino?
Yeah.
And then
and he
actually,
loves Star Trek.
No, he's actually, Carlo Canna's a very good fly half.
Yeah.
And people will pick on him, but actually, he's a really solid
Tesla. No, he's great. Yeah. 10.
And he's turned himself into a Tesla with both.
Yeah.
Whereas Ricardo Pacino was, I don't know what he brought.
No.
He was like watching, you know, in that way, sometimes you see an amateur player go like, I could do that. You know, what they do at Twickenham?
Yeah.
I could do that. It's just stick me in the team. It's like that happened, and somebody who realised how... he just looked completely out of his depth.
Yeah, he did.
And it wasn't... in the way, you know, Luke Price, and I've talked about this a lot for the Ospreys last year, he was playing above his level.
Yeah.
And I felt really sorry for him because he couldn't do anything. He couldn't cope with the pace of the game.
But
it wasn't like
best.
That. Pacino had... he didn't understand what was going on. He couldn't read the game.
Very unusual selection, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pacino.
And I think, ideally, I guess, his skill set fits the fly half position in he could kick and pass.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he wasn't great at either, but he could do both to a reasonable standard. And it's like you just put all of your points in the kind of RPG system into the two stats, and you left all game intelligent type stuff out.
Yeah.
So actually, that's the most important thing for fly half. You know, you look at the best fly halves, and all of them, there are flyers out there who aren't that quote-unquote talented, you know, but just because they read the game, they're able to get by at the absolute highest level.
Yeah, yeah. And it's amazing the fact that we have Pacino starting at 10, just completely overshadowing the fact that in the year of 2011, they had Matteo Prattichetti starting at 12. Like, how on earth did that start? And they had Pablo Cannavozio on the bench.
I quite like Cannavozio. He was fine. He was an entirely okay player.
Yeah. All right. But, yeah, very unusual back line for Italy.
Yes. I should say as well, Prattichetti played most of his rugby on the wing.
Right,
was fair to say, but plays a centre as well. To qualify. And he was, what, how old was he? Yeah, because he won his first cap in 2004.
Mm.
So that's only that's a 7-year test career. Fine.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But to touch on, you know, the rest of the back line, they had Giulio Tognolati on the wing, who scored two tries, the first of which was the second try of the match after Parise's, which was a lovely try again. And as you said, like, the complete big balls confidence Italy were playing with at that point, where Parise gets the ball on the short side and does this lovely pop back to Andrea Marzi, who's running a like curved line behind, who does like a kind of like overhead kind of pass to Tognolati, who finishes it really slickly in the corner. And it's just such a lovely try. Started with that pass by Parise.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that's a really attractive try.
It is, yeah.
And Parise's hands are excellent.
Lovely.
And it's a reminder of, and we talked about this on Italy's last game, actually he was very good.
Yeah.
There was a reason he developed that ego.
It was so fun watching this game, watching Parise in this game, because... there's so many players in this match who just aren't international, like Six Nations kind of standard. A lot of players who are nowhere near that, to be honest. And like, no disrespect to them, but there's a lot of players who are
most of the Italy team are. There's a few kind of dropped in. You know, you've got Parise, who was genuinely world class.
Yeah,
you've got Marcy, you've got McLean, who were international class.
Yeah,
like very solid,
very
good international
established
players.
Yeah.
You had the Italy front row who were
brilliant.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And then you had a few, you know, like the Benvenutis and so on, who are solid international players.
Yeah, and then dotted around the Russian team, you had like your Artemievs and Ostrushkos.
Yeah. Whereas most of that Italy team is Pro 14 standard.
Yeah.
Like, they're not bad players. They're just, as I said, playing
or
a level too
some
high.
Of them just the sort of players you'd have on the bench in a Six Nations
exactly,
game.
Exactly, yeah.
Not many of them would be trusted to start, you know? You wouldn't find them going to Twickenham with, I don't know, Praticetti starting in the centres.
Yeah.
You know?
Whereas that Russia team, I'm not going to be around the bush any longer. For the first half an hour, they were genuinely inept.
Yeah, they were. They were.
Like, they were. They then picked up and they then got far better.
Yeah.
But for half an hour, they were.
They were very confused.
Pretty much useless.
Yeah, they were very confused.
As bad as you'll see from a World Cup team.
Yeah.
They weren't making attack, or they were making the tackles, but they weren't keeping to any sort of system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were conceding ground so easily.
Yeah.
And just opening gaps. And like, to be honest, if they didn't need gaps.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they weren't covering the backfield.
Yeah.
And I think actually part of what happened in the second half is that they started covering the backfield far better.
Yeah.
Which meant Italy couldn't get a kicking game. They exploited. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Italy went
and they sort of disciplined a lot as well.
Oh, absolutely. The discipline was a huge problem as well.
Yeah.
And they were just making simple mistakes. The one you mentioned with the Bacino, the kick for the corner, where you've got two men covering across, and like, I thought at first watching it live, as it were, you know, on the first angle, that it's like, oh, it's really bad. Now even Artemyev's making mistakes.
Yeah.
But then you realise actually it's none of it's his fault. You know, he's left in a difficult position. He trusts his teammate to not really screw that up.
Yeah.
His teammate does really screw that up, and he's left just trying to scramble and make amends, which he can't really do because he's in a really awkward position.
Then at this period, the last Italian try before Russia start to wake up is Tagliolati's second. Where so Russia have a bit of an attack and find a little bit of space but get dumped into touch.
Yeah.
Italy take a quick throw and find Parise, as it just so happens, in the middle of the field, who he knows that if he just runs hard enough, he will be able to make some space himself. So he throws a dummy and swerves around two or three Russian players, and he throws this beautiful offload to Tagliolati, who scores under the posts, and does that funny little baby celebration where he puts the ball up his jumper. I'm not sure if he had a kid at that point, I'm assuming.
He did. Yeah, his partner gave birth that week.
Right, okay.
And he was away playing the World Cup. Remember, he scored two tries.
Right.
And the week that his baby was born. And he then does, like, the other one is he rocks the ball like his baby. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But not long after that, Russia make a change which is inspired, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's through an injury or if it was tactical. However, Alexander Shakharov, good scrum half in his own right, had been perfectly fine.
Though he does throw a properly terrible pass where he just drops it on the floor in front of him, essentially.
Yeah, where it goes about 5 inches forward and to nobody.
He just kind of drops it in front of the Italian defenders. Yeah, and everyone kind of just goes, you just do that. And Wayne Barnes actually waits a moment before blowing his whistle.
That is a forward pass, because I've never seen that before. Yeah, sure.
And
I don't know why you do that.
There's a couple of things where Wayne Barnes kind of has a sympathy for Russia. Because absolutely nothing is going their way from a momentum and game point of view.
But
so he, like the yellow card, I think, Italy received a yellow card, and I don't think that would have been given the other way around.
No. Russia did so much worse
in
their own 22 than Ungaro did at that point.
But it's for taking a man out without the ball.
Yeah.
And it's a penalty. It's a penalty.
Very hard done by, but yeah.
Yeah, but it happens because I did as well. Like, I think everyone felt sorry for Russia.
Yeah.
And heard the crowd really got behind Russia as well. Yeah.
But as I say, Shakharov's a perfectly good scrum half.
Yeah.
Watching, you know, a fair few times. But they bring him off in favour of the great Alexander Yanyushkin, who is just a god among scrum halves. He is a man who simultaneously manages to look like a 10-year-old boy and a dad.
Yes. Yanyushkin looks like he's made of Lego.
He does, doesn't he?
He's slightly too rectangular. Like, there's something about him, he's the wrong shape.
He's 5'5"?
Yes. But he's built. Like, but he's not built in... He's not sort of muscular, he's just sort of square.
He's very square. And honestly, he's... I love him because
like
his style...
He doesn't look like his shoulders be able to move his arms. He looked like he should be stuck in one position.
Despite all of this, you'd think he's sort of like, you know, sort of kicking that. And he has played 10. I think he's played on the wing for Russia as well. And he played a lot of sevens, of course, as well. But his style of play is so, like, open, like, broken field, kind of like... He will play at a billion miles an hour.
Yeah. So the closest thing, I think, the closest comparison you can make is Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
both in terms of his build as well.
His body shape is
and
very
his,
similar.
His body shape, and he plays a bit like Vatapluk, in that he's a massive, tiny shithouse.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's he nippy and he's quick and he likes to whip the ball away, but he's mostly sort of just angry with men bigger than him.
Yeah.
He's got that kind of small man syndrome, but he channels it really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, not long after Yanushkin comes onto the field, Russia get a line out in the Italian territory.
Yes, they do.
They set up a move which is so clearly just designed for Artemyev to go straight through. As was, I think, every time they had an attacking opportunity, every move would result in Artemyev carrying the ball in, because they were hoping he'd make a break.
Yeah, it's either Artemyev or it's Matakovsky in the centre. Matakovsky, yes, thank you, sorry, yeah. At 12, yeah. It's either that, or they want him to crash past three people.
Yeah.
Because they seem to think he's bigger than he was.
Offload to Artemyev.
But I don't know if it's... I was watching, they designed so many moves thinking this was Marnonu, thinking it was Jamie Roberts standing in the middle.
I don't know if he's Matavetsky.
Yeah, but also, like, okay, this is something I've read. I don't know if it's 100% proven.
Right.
But the Russian League is the only one in the world that doesn't drugs test. So I don't know why this is the guy they're looking at as being massive.
Might because the rugby do drugs test.
Yeah, but they were looking at him like, this is the biggest lad in the world. I can't believe we found him. We've got Clifford the Big Red Dog. He's going to charge. He's going to take a run up and he's going to come at you. But Clifford was really calm and really passive.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Look how big this dog was.
Mm. But yeah, Russia run this set piece move.
Yes.
Artemyev crushes up the middle and Yanushkin picks the ball up and runs the right hand side and realizes nothing is on. And therefore, he then just goes, oh, I don't know what to do here. Starts running to the left-hand side instead and just finds a massive gap and scores Russia's first ever try at any Rugby World Cup, which is
You're doing this a just disservice.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Because Russia carry a few phases and they work really hard at the line.
Yeah.
And they, for a while, have been slowly going forward and just retaining the ball well.
Yeah.
And sort of,
No. It was a perfectly well-constructed try. And, you know, they did
and
very well to take
it. Does spot that gap quite early on.
Yeah.
And he sells it completely.
Yeah.
And the runners around him sell it as well.
And I love that.
I want to highlight something.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, when I came to watch this game, I remembered that I had a version of this saved from when I made the video on Russia ahead of last year's World Cup.
Okay.
So, I had this game saved with Russian commentary. Although at first, so it starts off, the first like 2 minutes of the video, our Kiwi guy talking, then it throws over to the Fox Sports commentary, then it throws over to the Russian commentary.
Right.
So I get this like commentary whiplash. The guy, the Kiwi guy at the start, calls him Serge Parise.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Not even Sergio, calls him Serge Parise.
Sure.
Which is just incorrect. Derby, no, what's he calls him? Derbyshire?
Derbyshire.
Just Derbyshire.
That should be one of the easy names for him to pronounce.
Apparently not, yeah. He describes Adam Burns as the Aussie bloke, because he was, you know, Russian grandparents, lived in Australia most of his life, or all his life. He says his phrase, and I wrote this down. He says he's the Aussie bloke, his mother has a Russian, and then he moves on to the next player. Just like, in the dungeon?
Once had a white Russian, and then suddenly it's just, you're qualified to play for him now, he can get the World Cup, lads.
He's keeping Yanushkin in a dungeon somewhere, in his bed.
on the contrary, on the New Zealand commentary,
okay,
which was Gordon Bray, Matthew Cooper, and Justin Marshall,
right?
I think those were all Gordon Bray. However, fun pronunciations of players' names include, instead of Shakirov, what do you think a good mispronunciation of that would be?
Shakirov?
Shakira.
Shakira.
At one point, Gordon Bray calls him Shakira.
Well, he sold that sidestep. His hips truly did lie.
Yep.
Shakira, Shakira.
Twice? No, okay. In fact, Gordon Bray once and Justin Marshall once.
Talafau.
Called Tognolati Tortellini.
Oh, that's terrible. That's like Greg Clark saying, I watched for some reason Italy Namibia last year with the Australian commentary, and Greg Clark said, oh, it's a great assist there. He should buy him a bowl of pasta.
You can't just say that.
It's just xenophobic.
I mean, in fairness, Giulio Tognolati does sound like a name for pasta.
He does, yeah.
He's the one player that I think, if I were to make
so
up...
So does Pacino, actually. Pacino sounds like a pasta.
Does a bit.
It sounds like, well, I've like also thought, folded parcels. I've also thought Riccardo Pacino sounds and looks like he should be like the expert on a DIY show. Like, not the host. He should be the guy they bring in, sure. Like, you know, shit tons about history and nails.
Yeah. I've also always thought that Tommaso De Puccia sounds like a pasta sauce.
No, he sounds like an expert chef. He should be on this morning, like, teaching you how to make Riccardo Pacino.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Finally, I think it was Matthew Cooper called Mauro Bergamasco, pretty famous player.
Yeah.
Berlusconi.
Berlusconi, not even Berlusconi.
No, Berlusconi.
Berlusconi. So he didn't even mix him up with the then current Prime Minister of Italy.
No.
Who was Berlusconi, Silvio Berlusconi. No, he...
Berlusconi.
Fantastic. Okay, he just look, I really, really hate scones. I'm going to burn one.
Yeah. I'd want to pronounce it wrong.
Yes. My point about the Russian commentary was because I watched this game with Russian comms.
Right.
And I think this is worth highlighting, right? Their commentary as Yanushkin scores his try.
Okay.
Okay, we ready?
I'm so ready. That is very wholesome content.
It really
is. I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, I love that. And it did get me thinking as well, right? Or not thinking, just intrigued by the Russian commentary. So I have got, in addition, five things that happened in the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got the Russian commentary, and I'd like you to try and guess what they are.
Okay.
So let's start here. This one, there's a giveaway towards the end, so I might pause it early, but we'll see. Okay?
Yep. I'm guessing that's Tognolati's second try.
That is Tognolati's second try, the one he described a really lovely offload by Sergio Parise, which made them go, ay, ay, ay! Okay. Here is the next question. You've got one out of one so far. I'm very impressed.
Yep. That's Vladimir Ostrushko's try.
It is not. It is not. Take another guess.
Vladimir Ostrushko makes a break early on. Is it that?
Nope. It is Igor Klitschnikov taking a clearance by Italy in his own half. Under very little pressure.
Okay.
I think Italy have had all the ball up until now.
And they're just excited to be taking part.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's going
and
red.
He gets really carried away and starts screaming. And at this point, I made a note, they are 17-0 down.
Oh, bless him.
They get the ball and they get super excited. Okay, here is another one on a... Oh, I won't say anything.
I'm guessing... Right, okay, I'm going to take a wild and outlandish guess. Was that the point where Russia won a scrum penalty?
It was not.
No.
That would have been good. I think they got far more excited than that.
No, what was it?
The, as he says, pop, 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 pop. It's Vladimir. No, sorry, Vasily Artemyev drops on a loose ball. He chased, like, Italy stab a kick through from that. They've got a bit of an overlap. They put a grubber through.
Sure.
And Artemyev dives on it. And he goes, pop, 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 pop. I just thought that was fun.
Yeah. How many more? Two more?
Sure. Let's do two more. Yeah. Two more. I've got three more. Should we do all
okay,
three?
Let's do them. Let's do them.
Still three. Okay. I wonder if there's any Russian listeners feeling this is just really obvious.
I really can't figure that one out. I'm going to guess Luke McLean's try.
No, it's the conversion of Yanushkin's try.
Huh.
Well, they say, yes!
That makes sense. That makes sense, yeah. Okay, two more?
Okay, yep.
I'm going to guess that's Makovetsky's try.
No, that is the last try by Alessandro Zani. Right. No. Basically, what happens... Should we talk about that try for a second?
Sure.
Basically, what happens is Russia have a scrum on their own line. Italy drive them off the ball. The ball's supposed to lose. Zani picks it up, dives over.
Yeah.
And as they're shoved off their own ball, he starts going, no.
Oh, bless him.
Which is the satisfying moment. Yeah. And last, but absolutely not least, I reckon you should be able to guess this one.
That's Vladimir Ostrushko scoring in the corner.
That is Vladimir Ostrushko scoring in the corner. And I think that leads us on to Vladimir Ostrushko scoring in the corner.
Yeah. What a finish, to be fair. I mean,
spectacular.
When we had Blaine Scully on the, just remember that one time when we had Blaine Scully on the podcast? Do you remember those days? He was talking about how Ostrushko is just one of the hardest players to tackle in the world. And you can tell, whenever you watch him play sevens as well, you always can tell. Like,
yeah.
His upper body strength is phenomenal. He's so quick. But Russia starts spreading the ball wide, and one of the Italian players clearly doesn't fancy making that tackle, so shoots it for an interception and misses it. Ostrushko takes the loose ball.
But the thing is, from the angle we initially see, it looks like he's taken the interception.
Mm, yeah, because the cameraman
and it looks like it's gone. Yeah, and as you hear in the Russian comms there, they kind of go, oh, thinking they've taken the intercept.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where everyone just kind of stops.
Yeah.
And you think, hold on, has this... What's happened? You know, has it been a knock-on? Has it happened? And then he's just like, oh no, yeah. Ostrushko has it.
Yeah, and he properly manages to take... is it Tonya Lati on the outside? Whichever of the wings is opposite anyway, he manages to properly just take him on the outside with probably like... Well, there's a lot of room, but Tonya Lati's already outside him. So to swerve all the way outside him and still beat him, like when the other player has a head start, it's an incredible finish.
Yeah. If there's anything to watch from this game, it's this try.
Yeah, yeah.
This is just far and away the highlight.
You know?
Yeah.
That's such a great piece of skill.
It's the value of a winger, you know, and he's a seven specialist. Oh, he wasn't a seven specialist, but he played a lot of sevens. He was a consistent figure for Russia in the sevens.
Yeah, phenomenal sevens player.
Continued, you know, he adapted to 13 by the 2019 World Cup and was such a, as he said, like that thing Blaine said about him being such a hard man to tackle.
Yeah.
And you could tell because as well as being strong, you know, as you'd expect, I guess, he had such feet.
Yeah.
And it was the sort of the sheer dynamism of it. Like, he was leaping several times his own kind of size.
Yeah.
You know, he was stepping far further than you'd expect he could.
Yeah.
Like, you might cover a certain amount of space with him, but you think, actually, he's able to somehow get way outside you. And the way he steps, swerves, and then dives in the corner so quickly.
Yeah.
It's a spectacular thing. Right,
yeah. As I said, like, with this whole thing of, like, you know, Rugby X and the one-on-one tiebreak thing.
Yes.
There are a few players in the world that I would rather have in that scenario than Vladimir Ostrushko.
Oh, he's a good shout.
Yeah. Just because he just looks like one of those players. And, like, even if you tackle him, he will take you with him, you know?
Yes.
He's one of those players. He's such a phenomenal player if you've got him one-on-one.
Yeah. And it was, you kind of came for Artemyev, but you stayed for Ostrushko.
Yeah.
Like, he was so much fun. And he was kind of a discovery during this World Cup, I think, for a lot of people, myself included, someone that hadn't seen much of Russia prior to this. I think I've seen one of their games in the lead-up.
Yeah.
No, I watched a couple of games in the Churchill Cup, that side,
Sure.
You kind of went, oh, this guy is so much fun.
He is,
and we'll get on to, when we get there, his try against Australia.
Yeah.
But they're two brilliant and super fun finishes.
Yeah.
Like, his try against Australia is from 50 metres. This one's only from 20-odd.
But he steps still Ashley Cooper as well.
He does, And then outpaces whoever it would be on.
Quaid,
he definitely does Quaid. Quaid's definitely in shot as he goes over. Yeah, but he's brilliant. He's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, he's great. And, of course, that try is started by a great bit of handling from Viktor Gresev, who's playing number 8, who I think was a large part of why Russia got back into the game, because
when
he woke up, Russia woke up, because he carried so well. And the first thing that happens at the second half begins, it's Gresev catches the kick, and he just runs straight, and he managed to bowl over Cittadini, who's like a huge man himself, and managed to bowl him over and go through another one of the Italian forwards. And he made probably two or three breaks and carried so well in this game.
And his feet as well. Like, I remember him as a proper hard-working number 8 who carried hard. I didn't realise he had a sidestep on him. I had no recollection of that. I had no recollection of the way that when he goes through on that break, he then steps the fullback and he gets caught and everything and he gets pulled down. But he still made about 40 yards.
Yeah.
And he has a similar thing in the first half where someone shoots out a line to hit him.
Yeah.
And he just outright sidesteps them and then goes through, makes a break. I thought Gresev was... We'll get onto it, but man of the match contention. I thought he was phenomenal.
He's definitely up there. I don't even remember him that was a number 8, to be honest. I remember him more as being a 7 and just thinking like how solid he looked and how big he looked. He just looked, again, a player who was just really difficult to tackle behind the game line, you know?
Yeah.
And he showed that, and he always managed to break the first tackle pretty much every single time he carried the ball.
7s as well. Garbazov at 7 for Russia.
Yeah. He had
fantastic
a great game.
As well.
He had a great game.
Great game.
This is
there's a few times they just got him into space and he was just bouncing people off left, right, and centre. Like, he just had that kind of like Hamish Watson-ish thing of just like people would bounce off him, even if they were bigger than him, even if they went with perfect tackle technique. He just repelled people like some sort of magnet being held up.
Great breakdown forward as well. Like, I remember I was really shocked when they stopped to move him to second row. Obviously, it's kind of worked out.
He slowed
since.
Down, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's similar to the sort of Alessandro Zani kind of story. But because, of course, this is my point of reference, Garbazov, this game.
Yeah.
Because he is fantastic and he carried the ball so well. He always came off the line and chopped people. And he's a great breakdown forward.
Right. He's 37. He was born in 1983 and he still hasn't retired from international rugby.
Fair
he played in Russia's last game.
Fair play.
He started in the second row against Portugal earlier this year.
Alongside Ramil Gajcin.
Yeah. I just had a moment of, how old is he? Because he already had like 30, 40 caps by this point,
Christ.
By 2011.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even first choice, was he?
No. He came in. He's been such a servant for Italy. Oh, that game against Portugal. Sorry, yes. Sorry, very much. That game against Portugal was his 100th cap.
Oh, was it? Good on him.
Good on
Congrats
him,
Congrats to Andrei Garbazov. I know you're listening.
Any other standouts in the Russian team? Because I think it was that back row. I think because they had a back row of Grashev and Gresev.
Yeah.
I thought Grashev was good as well. I think it was 7 and 8 in Garbazov and Grashev were the real standouts.
Yeah.
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 But and the other big guy is Yanyushkin, who we mentioned the try, but generally he has a huge impact when he comes on.
Yeah, absolutely. For Italy, I think there's two players who I enjoyed the most. Well, first, let's talk about Tommaso Benvenuti. Because when you prefaced this episode, you said that you just remembered Tommaso Benvenuti just losing the plot. Can you just explain what you meant by that?
So, Benvenuti, right, he started on the wing in the previous game, and he has then moved into 13. And he plays it with the responsibility of like a Sunday league, like second, third rugby player who is moved from, you know, like the wing to 10 or something.
Yeah.
You know, I see it happen a handful of times. Like lower level and moved into a more responsible position.
Sure.
And just go, it's my day, lads. It's my day. I'm on this. So he plays the first half just offloading everything and just running these lines. He scores quite a nice try.
It's not nice, but he scores a try.
He scores a try, sure, yeah. He finishes it well. He finishes it well.
Yeah, sure.
He then, in the second half, he has a moment for his second try where there's nothing really on. And he stabs this grubber through off his wrong foot, just kind of on the outside of the boots. It bounces through and he just about manages to get it with one arm outstretched. Like, The ball bounced to a completely different place to where he's going, but one arm outstretched just managed to dot it down. He then decides, because Ricardo Bacchino is completely useless, actually, lads, I'm taking this. And he takes over the goal kicking. And how does it go, William Rees-Owen?
He sprays it very hard, far to the left-hand side. See also the next three conversions he attempts. Because on the second conversion, he improvises his own kicking stance, which you can tell he's never done before. Like, you can tell the first time he's done it. He does something like with his arms, where like he puts his arms up sort of together in, like, I guess kind of a Garamara way, but he kind of has them crossed, I suppose. But you can tell he's never done this before.
No, and he's got this look of like, I know when I tried kicking, and you know, when I practiced as a kid, you'd kind of pretend you had a Wilkinson-style bit, you know. So you'd kind of hold your hands in a certain way, you'd wave them about a bit, and you'd add your own bits in, you know.
Yeah.
And eventually you'd reach a stage which you'd just go, no, I need to grow up, none of this actually helps anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was doing that. He was kind of waving his hands about, and it changed each kick. And he sort of looked like, you know that thing when they have like gifs of boxers doing that like standing ready pose, like on you know, like on a fighting game menu character select screen, and he's kind of got his fist kind of hovering a bit like back and forth. He looked like he was doing that, and then he kind of lines up the kick and he shanks it completely in a different way each time.
Yeah.
So one of them he hits too high, one of them he just hits wide, and one of them he hits like really, like, I always remember there was a guy who played for Perpignan, South African, called Philip Berger, who I always remember because he had the lowest kicking style I've ever seen. In he basically hit it like 5 metres over the bar, and he wouldn't climb at all. Like, exactly, like from halfway, he kicked it goals from halfway, but he kicked it so low, the trajectory of his kick did not climb at all. And he kicks one of them a bit like that, like not to the extent of Philip Berger, who again, will be one of these players, not a particularly famous player, but I'll remember him in 100 years' time because he had a really unique kicking style.
Are you going to be talking about rugby still when you're 125?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
You signed a contract.
I frankly, I thought I was going to be talking about 100% Wolf when I'm 125 as well. But yeah, it'd be good to talk about rugs. I hate that. Why did I say rugs? Because I love carpets. Anyway, so Benvenuti, right, yeah, he takes over the kicking. He misses them all. I went and looked this up. I went and checked. Take a guess how many kicks Tommaso Benvenuti has kicked in his professional career.
Zero.
No.
Oh, really? One.
Six.
Oh.
Six. So he kicked one penalty for Perpignan, and he's kicked then four conversions for Treviso.
Right.
And then he kicked one for one goal for Emerging Italy when he was playing for Italy A.
Right.
But I went and checked, and he did his kind of... His points tally for the under-20s and under-18s suggested he kicked as well.
Right, okay.
So he kicked as like up to under-20s.
The first time he ever kicked a goal, even though it looked like it.
But they weren't, you know, it wasn't massive point tallies. It wasn't like he was the designated first year's kicker.
No, of course not.
But he might have filled in every now and again. You know, like all of his kicking tallies for age graders looked like they were...
But he was just very eager
to take one or two
in this game.
Exactly,
instead of Massey or McLean.
Yeah, he has, in fact, I believe, nailed one conversion for Italy. He definitely has kicked some. I'm going to check this for certain. I don't think he has. No, he hasn't. No, you're right. You're right. No, he has not. Well, but he has attempted three.
Yeah, and missed them all. Should we talk about Matavetsky's try
towards
the end? So,
yeah.
It's a what a try, to be fair.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, they built for so long, and it's a great pass by Rashkov to finish it off.
Yeah. And there was this thing in the World Cup last year, watching the opening game in the Tokyo Fan Zone. Someone said to me about, God, I never knew Russia would have good hands when he put together like one nice passing movement. It was like, actually, this is what they were in 2011, is they were a handling team of big units. They were designed so differently to the you know the current Russia team, what Lynn Jones got out of them, which is he went, we've got some big units, and we've got a 10 who's an absolute shithouse. Let's make the most of this. Whereas this Italy team, actually, they chucked the ball about and they tried to move teams about in a way that didn't make any sense, but they just looked like they were having fun. And that was what this try looked like.
Bear in mind, before these matches at the World Cup, Kingsley Jones had set them a target to beat the USA, come within 50 of Italy, and come within 70 of Ireland and Australia. And that included scoring tries. You know, they knew that their defence wasn't going to be as good. They weren't going to be as fit as these teams. But they really, really practised their ball skills and they played really well. And obviously, they didn't go for respect as much as the 2019 team did, where they tried to keep the scores down. They kind of acknowledged that, but they really, really wanted to shut the ball about, and that try really, really showed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is just, you know, there's lots of passing, lots of offloading. And then right at the end, as I said, by Rajkov, who normally a 12, moved into 10 for this game.
Normally 13.
And his kicking, normally 13, yeah. Mm. His kicking was up and down, should we say.
Yeah, he had an extra kicking session.
With Ruckley, no. Yeah, up and down, thankfully not charged down, but up and down. And then he throws this just absolutely brilliant wide pass.
It's fantastic.
Pass.
It's in the air for ages as well, but it's yes. that good that Makovetsi still has time to finish it in the corner.
Yeah. And it isn't like a Ricardo Pochino pass, which just floats way too high for way
no,
too long.
Lovely.
And does nothing. It's lovely, it's accurate, and Makovetsi's able to slide over with, you know, unopposed, like no one nearby.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of, there's something about it, you almost want to call it back and check something.
Yeah.
Because it looks too clean and crisp.
Yeah, too good to be true.
Yeah.
Okay, another player who I was saying earlier, sorry, I forgot about this. Two players mm-hmm. I enjoyed. The other one, I really enjoyed Tonyulati in this game. Like, aside
yes!
from his two tries, he was great fun. So
he was having such a good day, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because this is like the most space he's had in an Italian match. So there's three instances I want to pick up on.
Okay.
The first of which is that he manages to kick a ball out on the full from kicking it through a ruck. He skies it that much that he manages to go out on the full while just trying to win the ball back in a ruck. The second one is obviously Tonyulati grew up playing scrum half, then moved out to the wing. And there's one point in the first half, start of the second half, mm-hmm. when Russia have kicked downfield, it's Yanushkin's kicked the ball downfield, and Italy managed to recover it. They've had plenty of time. Tonyulati has loads and loads of space on the short side. And he does the complete opposite thing of the frustrated winger thing, because he's had loads of ball. He's already scored two tries in the first half hour.
Yeah.
He can play ball now. instead of darting down that side where he would have made a good break, he instead just decides to flex a box kick, even though there's nobody behind him either. So he's not set for it. But basically he's decided, well, I might as well kick it before Eduardo Gora gets back here, or else he'll bollock me. Because he could take himself.
You can see how much fun he's having.
Yeah. And then the final...
I don't know if there's something in like, I know when I get back to Italy, when I get back home, I've got a newborn baby and I'm not going to sleep for 3 years. This is the last time I'm ever going to have fun.
Yeah, yeah. He can show off in front of his mates. But the final point that I wanted to go with was just before Makovetsky's try. It was literally in the phases leading up to it. You can see there's a fight starts to break out.
Yes.
Tonyulati is involved in that. And he sees the number 21... who he's opposite. And
22, isn't it?
No, it's 21.
Okay.
He sees that his opposite man, who is playing in the centre, he gives him a bit of a push and goes to him and thinks, yeah, go on then, I'm going to get him. But what he doesn't realise is that his opposite man is Mikhail Sidorov, who was a flanker who could play in the centres. So he was, could play back row / centre / wing. Very versatile player. And he is hard, man. Like, then Sidorov kind of turns around and goes, oh, you're pushing me. You may be like loads of points up, and you may have scored a couple of tries, but you're still a winger, and I would still knock you out. And
that means I've got even less motivation, or even less reason to not get a red card.
Yeah, exactly. And then he properly just goes for him and just starts like getting ready to just pummel him. At which point then he shoves Tonyulati away with force, and Tonyulati then just kind of looks at him like, fair play, and gets back in the line. Like, tries to like style out, it's like, oh, I'm too cool to fight you. But really, he is shit scared.
Oh, yeah. I've always got a sense from Tonyulati that he's the kind of guy that uses I play rugby for Italy to chat up life.
Yeah, he probably does.
Like, there's something about him that kind of suggests that to me. Like what I said before about Alexis Palinson having leather jackets.
Yes.
Like, I get the same sort of energy from Tonyulati of, like, he thinks he's shit up, and it's great that he got a chance to show it.
You know the cliche chat up line where people say, oh yeah, I could have gone professional but it broke my leg? He's like that,
exactly.
But he never broke his leg.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He actually, and once, you know, he's got two tries. Doesn't matter who it's against. Against Russia. You know, it's a huge country.
Just they beat us in the volleyball.
Really big country. Yeah, exactly. You know, I finally got revenge for that and for, you know, wars and that. Do you want to know a really sad fact?
Go on.
Tonyulati played 15 tests for Italy. These were his only two tries.
Really?
Yeah.
Bless him.
I know.
Because he seems to really...
1-6, 1-9. That's not a bad hit rate for an Italian international.
The thing is, I was quite convinced that he didn't want that third try, that he was going for the old jug avoidance strategies.
Yeah.
Because, like, he was always, like, as soon as he had that second try, he was just passing the ball and kicking it and just trying to flex everything else he could other than try scoring and making breaks. So... I'm very surprised there is only tries.
Yeah. And yet, he must have just thought, this is the start of things, lads. I'm kicking off. I've got it. It's all going well for old Gio. And then it kind of just petered out after that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was only his second start. Okay.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
He'd come off the bench a few times, including against the All Blacks at scrum half.
Mm.
So, yeah. Yeah, you know, it was he was doing all right. Yeah. And he was just having a lot of fun. And I'm all for that.
Good on him.
In a way, Benvenuti was like was showing off. Tony Lottie was on the over end of the scale of like, time. This kind of game. Yeah, he was having so much fun.
I bet his night out was fun after that.
So, does that bring us through? We've got, we've got one other point.
Sure.
So, the scrum, which I think is worth touching on, I've mentioned a few times, but the Italian scrum is completely in control.
Yeah.
Like, right from literally the first action of the match, other than that kick out and the fall, Italy are smashing them through.
Yeah.
It's kind of horrible. And then, at 57 minutes, Italy go, you know what? I don't think our scrum's going well enough. And they bring on Martin Castrogiovanni.
Yes. Who wins a line out and makes a break.
Yes. As well. Yeah. Oh, yeah. His clean break is great. Fun. Anytime Castro makes a break is so much fun to watch. Just with his hair waving and all this.
It was kind of great watching Castro in that game because he kind of, he had the little puppy dog look in his face of like, I put playing the Premiership, usually my positions aren't this bad.
Yeah.
Or this tired, I suppose, because Russia weren't that bad, but, you know. Yeah,
they were for half an hour.
By the time Castro was on. But
Okay, shall we move on to our man of the match and our dick of the day?
Yeah, happily. Shall I start on man of the match?
Yeah. Please start with dick of the day. I'm going to be difficult. I'm going to be the dick of the day.
Oh, really? Oh, I'd like you to start for doing dick of the day first.
Fine, okay. Well, one of the contenders was the rain for making me see 100% Wolf twice. But, again, there's a few things, so it feels quite harsh to pick on Italy for any of the mistakes they made.
Yeah.
Sorry, for Russia. Yeah. Russia for any of the mistakes they made. And it feels quite... Like, I can't pick on the props for being destroyed scrum after scrum after scrum. Because it's such a good Italian front row. It is, great. And, you know, they were destroying Australia. Like, there's no shame in being taken apart by that Australian team.
Yeah, of course.
Like, Italian team. God, I can't speak. But, you know... I then also think, basically, I'm torn between two people, right?
Okay.
One is Tommaso Benvenuti for the actions I described in just over-promoting himself repeatedly. And clearly because he'd gone into this game thinking, like, I'm going to be man of the match, I'm going to get a hat-trick, I'm going to be brilliant, I'm going to show myself as being the best player in the world. And he didn't do that, did he?
No.
It did not go entirely according to plan.
So, is that him? It's
him, or the other option is Alex Sharikov.
Okay.
Shakarov. I'm struggling. Yeah. Shakira. Normally I'm entirely fine. Yeah, Shakira, pronouncing Russian names. But for doing one shit pass, then getting Shepherds crooked after 25 minutes for the man who comes on and scores your country's first ever World Cup try is a kind of dick of the day worthy
action.
It
kind of is, isn't it?
It's kind of quite hard to ignore. Also, Ricardo Pochino existed.
Sure.
But I think because I sort of feel a level of sympathy for the other two, whereas Benvenuti I like and has had a solid career either side of that and is a good player in his own right, Tommaso Benvenuti is my dick of the day.
Okay, well, I've got to tell you that, and I don't usually do this, you are wrong. Because the dick of the day, right, and if you watch this on the Russian comms, you won't have picked up on this, because there's a point where one of the New Zealand commentators points out in the second half, World Rugby officials had made sure that Mauro Bergamasco had to come off for a minute because he was wearing specifically illegally branded shorts.
What?
Yeah. So he was, like, you remember the Tuolangi mouthguard incident? Where it was similar
We should probably mention that. Like, to clarify that, both Tuolangi brothers, both Alizana and Manu, were fined in this World Cup for wearing mouthguards, wearing sponsorship.
Yeah.
You're not allowed any non-World Cup officially branded sponsors in the World Cup. Whereas they were advertising on the mouthguard, they weren't paid to do it.
Yeah. So the same thing happened to Mauro Bergamasco in this game. He was wearing branded shorts, and clearly at some point in the first half, a World Rugby official had spotted this and tried to get hold of him. And so Wayne Barnes had to sort of say to him, oh yeah, can you just go and change your shorts, please? So the commentators were saying, oh yeah, Mauro Bergamasco is wearing branded shorts, so he's having to just change them. So yeah, he had to come out, and then he ran on with a different pair of shorts. So Mauro Bergamasco, for that, is the dick of the day.
Fair enough. Yeah, hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Do you know what brand the short? What brand was
not
the shorts?
Not a clue. Not a clue.
Maybe okay. It was
Gigliottinilati's pasta.
Yeah. Can we chase them and try to get them to sponsor us?
Yeah, I'd fancy that.
Can we try and get some sweet dollar that we're paying Mario Burger Master?
Yes, please. I'd like that.
Yeah. You know, they love paying people for 2011, so whatever.
True.
Why this game?
I know!
People that can get away with it.
Why Mario Burger Master, not Parise?
Who's staring at Mario Burger Master's arse enough to think, you know what, I want to see that company. I guess if he scores a try, and it was that kind of game where Mario Burger Master would score a try, and he, you know, but was quite high-scoring forward.
Parise was stood next to him. Why didn't they brand his arse?
He's probably less likely to agree to it, considering Parise probably knew the laws, knew the rules, speaks like 18 languages, and he also is on these incredible deals with various sponsors anyway.
True.
So probably didn't need it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels odd. Why not pick a back or someone?
Yeah.
Because if you pick Tonyalati, we just spent enough time staring at his ass because he's diving over the try line. Sponsor both wingers.
That's a bizarre turn of events. So that's my
Luke McLean's. Luke McLean's try is very nice as well, actually, to mention quickly.
Yeah.
Takes it really well. Really good finish. Yeah. Really good finish. Like, runs 50 metres, skins someone.
Yeah.
Good player. I always liked Luke McLean. Yeah. I always thought he was better than people gave him credit for.
Man of the match.
Man of the match. Okay. You start.
Yeah, okay. Gresheff is one person that I have written down. Tonyalati another. But I'm just going to have to give it to Sergio Parise. because he had a direct hand in three of the first five Italian tries, something. He created so much and carried the ball well. And when he did show off, he was great at it. So you've got to give him the license for that. So I'm afraid it's a cop-out giving it to the world-class player on the pitch. But it just is Sergio Parise in my eyes.
It's Paul Derbyshire. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
So Gresheff, I thought, was exceptional. I thought he was fantastic for Russia.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Again, I think Parise was great, as you're saying. I think made a lot of space, carried very well, took his try very well. Generally very good. And Tonyalati, I thought, was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the way he played.
Yeah.
Similarly, actually, Luke McLean, like, I don't think gets much credit. Him and Eduardo Gori both really stitched things together. And you saw McLean, he ended up playing 10 at the end because for some reason, the thing that caused them to bring Burkino off is an injury. But whatever. McLean ends up playing everywhere. So he plays a bit of fullback, plays a bit in the centre, plays a bit on the wing, plays, you know, a bit of fly half. And just, he's such a good link man.
Yeah, I
always raised him very highly.
I've got respect as well for the fact that McLean's first touch of the ball was about 20 minutes into the game. The other winger's already scored a try or two and he just kicks it. And it's like, oh, fair play. You're not a very frustrated winger.
Yeah. But he always had that about him, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was an ironic calmness. He was the kind of player that he needed. Yeah, and Andrea Marzi as well, I thought, was good whenever he touched the ball. He was off that school of fullback who smashed it up, which happened a lot of the time, because he'd converted from centre. But but my man of the match is Salvatore Perugini.
Oh, that's fair. That's a good call.
Because he played 80 minutes and he was completely destructive.
He was everywhere around the park as well.
Exactly, yeah. So for managing to be consistently...
That's a good call.
...destroying the opposition for 80 minutes in the scrum.
Yeah.
And getting around in the loose as well.
Yeah, I respect that.
It's hard to look beyond Perugini for Lucia Fretley.
No, yeah, good call.
So, I believe that more or less brings us to the end of another episode. Do you have anything else to say?
No, I'm happy.
No? You don't want to hear more plot points from 100% Wolf?
No, I feel like I've got it all sussed, you know? I think I've got 100% sussed.
Oh, cool. Not 50%, not 50% boy, none of that.
No. 100.
Cool. Well, I'm very glad to hear that. Join us again next time for episode 21, when we will be talking about Tonga against Japan. It's that really fun pool where you've got three good tier two nations really throwing everything at each other.
Yeah.
We should be joined by a returning guest. So that is hopefully an exciting thing for you.
Yeah.
It's, I'm afraid, not Carly Rae Jepsen. She couldn't find the time in the schedule.
No, just fair enough.
It's not Canada again. Why would you care?
Exactly.
Why would you care about Tonga against Japan?
Exactly.
Fair enough.
Why should she?
She's.
Why did
she cares deeply? She. I don't know. I just thought, well, I could call her maybe, but I had to. Yeah.
Classic.
It was a real tug of war to get her. I've genuinely been listening to a lot of Carly Rae Jepsen the last week or so.
Oh wow! Since the other episode,
she's great. She's so good. Like, she's probably like the best pop writer ish maybe of a generation. Maybe. I think she's exceptional. I think she's very, very good. And I think emotion is like one of the
points under her. I wouldn't go that far. But
do you know how far I would go?
What?
Not very far. I'd go back into cinema and watch 100 Wolf again.
Okay. Okay. That's cool. Done?
Right. That's done. Right. Sweet. What are you doing next? You up to anything?
Not really, to be honest. Gonna eat some food.
Oh, yeah? What are you having?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Friday night. What sort of pizza? It won't be Friday night when this is dropped, but...
Of course, the premiership starts tonight, doesn't it? People won't be hearing that now, yeah.
Yeah, we're very late.
Yeah, Sale can go and play, and I'll take total credit for them if they beat Quinns tonight.
Yeah, which they will have already done or not done by the time you hear this.
Yeah, this is coming out in like 2 weeks' time. We're recording this one early.
Yeah.
Cool, okay.
Good stuff.
Well, I'll see you another time.
Yeah, man.
I'll see the listeners another time. It's lovely to talk to you. Yeah,
man.
We should do this again.
Yeah, man. Yeah, keep in touch. What's your number, by the way? What's your number? Let me...
Do you want to call me maybe?
Yeah.
Like Steve Diamond called me maybe.
Classic.
Can't believe that. Anyway, sorry, I'm still in disbelief about that. We'll see you another time.
Bye.
Good, am I? I'm actually ending this now. Cool, right. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.